bought a boat.
You bought a boat?
Yeah, from Deuce.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's called the SS Peener 64.
Rashi, Deuce has bought a lot of boats. He's used my credit card.
Hey, wait a minute. I just got a text message from him. It's the SS Peener 65. Oh, 66. Why does the number keep going up, Dad?
Because he keeps sinking them. He's not a very good sailor. He's a Boston Terrier. He keeps
67.
He keeps buying these yachts on credit.
69.
Which he's ruined. And he names them all Peeners because he can't pronounce peanuts.
72.
Yeah, and he sinks them all. He looks really cute in that little white sailor's cap, though.
78.
Rash, you better just get yourself an inner tube. You're not going to get out in the ocean any other way.
Oh, man. I don't think I'm going to borrow Deuce's boat at all.
It's lucky you can dog paddle.
This is Almost Live with Paul and Misty, and we have marble sodas.
Marble sodas?
Yes, marble sodas.
Oh, yeah. You became interested in that on our recent trip to New York.
At what? Ninja?
Ninja restaurant in New York. That was a lot of fun.
Okay, so I'm going to open it right now. I pulled a little... Here's what it is. For you guys who don't know, it's a bottle of soda with marble in it. Go figure. Very aptly named. Mm-hmm. But what happens is it comes covered in a little piece of plastic, and in that piece of plastic, there's a little... kind of like a step that you push out. It's a punch, actually, is what it is. And the marble doesn't release any chemicals into the soda or anything. It just really gives a good seal to the top of the soda bottle.
Okay.
And so you punch the piece out, and then you push down on it, and it releases the marble. I don't know if I can do this on the microphone so you guys can hear it. I will try, but it takes...
I'll pull you up.
I can't do it with one finger. Here, hold on. Okay. You can hear Deuce licking in the background. This is clearly stressful and festive. Here we go. There it is. Did you hear the marble drop? There it goes. And now it's going...
And now that doesn't affect the taste of it or anything? It's just something to play with while
you open? Yeah, well, and then you just got to drink around it. See, like, these little indentations in the side of the... But there's indentations in the side of the bottle. And when you drink the soda, you want to trap the marble in those indentations, because otherwise it comes rolling up and makes noises like you just heard.
But also begs the question of why a marble in your soda.
I don't know. It's just cool to have it in
don't
there.
Don't they do a similar thing with Guinness in the bottle, where they add some sort of marble?
Well, or there is something. Yeah, there's something
that
rattling
a chemical
around in there.
Though, doesn't it? Oh, I don't
sure
know.
Exactly
I don't drink Guinness.
What flavor is that?
Lychee or lychee or
lychee,
lychee, lychee, lychee.
So
and it has little smiling lychees on it. Look at they're taking off their clothes.
Oh
this
yeah,
one is
they're
stripping
they're
its peel.
They're getting out of their pus.
They're what?
What?
They're,
who the hell would drink that? That's milk.
They're peel or husk, so I pronounced it pusk. Sorry, it sounds disgusting.
Well, that sounds gross, and now I don't want to drink it.
No, they're peel. They're peel. They're lychee.
They're appealing.
They are appealing.
For me. Yes. And they are very happy to be nude. See?
Yes, he looks happy to be au naturel there.
So, oh, we are happy to be nude. Actually, this one looks a little bashful because it has pink cheeks. The other one looks happy and excited because it is still in its peel. The other one looks a little embarrassed because it's kind of pink.
Oh, okay. He was streaking.
No, he will be in a minute. He's half naked there.
Yes, that's right.
So I hate to bring it back a little bit, but Ninja restaurant?
We didn't talk about this on here?
Oh, no. We've been gone for like 6 weeks.
Oh, Ninja. My God. You guys.
We have a lot to cover. We have our trip to New York to cover.
They light everything on fire at Ninja. It's my favorite restaurant.
And they're all dressed like ninjas, I'm assuming.
Of course they are.
Okay, this was a restaurant that I was introduced to some time ago by Dan DiDio, who had a DC writer and editor meeting there. And it's a restaurant. It's on Hudson Street in New York. And what you do is there's just a plain glass door there, and it just has the word Ninja written on it and a little Japanese sculpture outside. And what you do is you walk in, and it's basically a little alcove with a place to sit. And there's
a stone.
Yeah, and there's
just
a girl.
Like a little stone cave entrance.
Yeah, a little stone cave, and there's a girl behind the desk, and she calls to somebody via microphone, you know, seeing if your reservation is ready. And if your reservation is ready, everything is in black also. A black door slides open, and you get into an elevator. And you're going like, what the hell is this? And
it
you,
sounds cool.
Yes.
It's just so awesome.
But it also sounds almost spy-like, too.
Yes.
So it's
I could
so
see an awesome,
awesome
spy restaurant going on right now.
And what, oh yeah. And what
yeah,
happens?
Yeah, there's just a bathroom. Oh, I will tell you about it. No, I'll tell you about it, though, because the door slides with chains.
And special and, weights.
Yeah, yeah, there's it's a chain and pulley yeah. sliding system. So that was cool.
So what happens is you take an elevator down a couple of levels, and when it opens, you're attacked by a ninja. And then once you defeat him, you fight your way through to your table. And you were taken by a ninja guide through what looks like a little feudal Japanese village at night.
Over a little wooden Japanese bridge.
And into this area. And the first time I ate there, we were taken to a private room when the ninjas kind of burst into the room at odd points to threaten you with weapons that aren't all that really
and appetizers.
And appetizers.
They threaten you with appetizers?
And weapons, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like a cross between...
take a canopy! No!
It's a Disney attraction. It's like a Disney attraction crossed with Benihana.
It and, is. It's yeah. really fun.
Yeah. And I actually think they did cook at... They had a teppanyaki table the first time I went there with the DC folks. Where they did cook things there. But when we went there, when we took Calla, our niece,
we took her to New York.
We took her to New York for her 12th birthday, and we really did the town up. We took her all over. She's a perfect age to go and see this because she's not young enough where it just sort of like slides off her like a lot of stuff to do. And she's not, you know, too hip to... think it's kind of lame. Yeah. She really loved it, and we did everything from the boat ride around.
Yeah, don't say that. Let's finish Ninja, and then we'll go back and tell them what we took her to do. So, but, at Ninja, yeah, they have special dishes, and then they have little, I think Ninja Stars for
ninja
little
stars.
Specialty things. Like you can order a Ninja coffee, where and I have a video of it that what? I can give you to post. Oh, honey,
yes.
They light it on fire, and it's you know they have a black martini. That you can order. They and Calla actually got a non-alcoholic one, which I'm pretty sure was white grape juice with black food coloring in it.
Yes. And
but
it came
it
with a
really
plastic
tasty.
Shuriken in it.
Yeah, it comes with a little plastic shuriken. And they do a lot of magic tricks.
Oh, wow.
Which is really interesting. Dude. Like the guy, for those of you, and I'll tell you in just a second, but there's a magic trick where there's a dessert called the Ninja Star. And if you come out, this smart-ass ninja comes and he goes, well, there's your dessert. And he'll drop a real authentic metal ninja star on the table in front of you. And you're like, oh, thank you. And he goes, oh, hang on a second. And he throws it in the bottom, like in a little pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then puts fire liquid, you know, fire lighter fluid around it, lights it on fire, puts the lid on the pan. And when he lifts the lid, 1, 2, 3, there's your actual desserts. And he scooped them out.
Wow.
And so those of you magicians who know what that is... know how they did it.
Yes.
Because I went, oh, it's one of those things, because there's a name for that gimmick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's very clever. And the guy looked at me like, shut up. You know, like, don't tell everybody what we're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you, masked magician.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, hey, that's kind of a clever idea. I've never seen that done before with a dessert.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things like that. Like, you could order steak in a box. If you order the miso soup... it, and you find a carrot in it, a ninja will attack you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or you get a prize, one or the other.
Yes.
And Calla got $20 off her dinner because I guess nobody wanted to attack us.
Yes.
We must have looked very tough.
Yeah.
You know, so they do really fun stuff like that. And then I got some steak on fire. Everything was on fire.
Apparently, ninja equals fire.
What did you say?
Ninja equals fire.
There it does. It's like black stuff.
I forget
fire.
What I had. I think I just had a bowl of fire.
You had seafood.
You know, I guess I did, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a ninja on fire isn't very stealthy, though.
Oh, it is if he's running around on the tips of the flame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
True.
Mm.
Fire makes things better, though.
It does. Fire made everything taste so good.
It's sort of the essence
ridiculous.
And lore of the ninja.
Oh, it was just fun. It was just the gimmick of the ninja is all it was. But it was really fun, you know? And it was like when you're coming in, you don't... excuse me, you don't know what you're about to deal with. So they're like, who hasn't been here before? You go first. And it's like, no. And of course, I'm the one that goes first. So people are like, booga, 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 jumping out at you. And you're like, oh, damn. You know, and you're the asshole that's in the front of the line. And everybody's laughing at you. Ah, ha, ha, she jumped. Ha, ha, hysterical. Mm-hmm. Jerks. You know, so of course, you want to take somebody back and go, no, you go first. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know. So that was what we did Saturday afternoon. But we got there. Now, you came in Thursday night.
Okay.
And how wonderful, because I just got off the phone with Trisha Lasky. And she said, you're doing a podcast? And I said, yes. She said, make sure you mention Scott Adsit.
Of course.
And
so
we have to.
Alaska, Alaska mentioned Scott Adsit, so that's a twofer.
It is.
Yes.
It totally is a twofer, yes.
Okay.
Who is also on Scott's show, Twofer. Used to be. Remember him?
Yes.
30 bucks.
Yeah, he's still there.
Yeah, yeah. But so you went in Thursday night.
Yes, because you had gone to stop in Detroit and pick up Calla.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd gone in a night early to just get the hotel room and everything. We stayed at the Iroquois, which is my favorite place in Midtown. It's right next to the Algonquin, which is in itself a nice hotel. But I like the Iroquois just a little bit
more. I like
to
stay at the Iroquois and eat at the Algonquin.
Yeah, there you
go. Yeah, that's what I like.
That's a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And it was Thursday night, and I was looking for something to do, and you suggested, and actually you...
Well, you sent me a note, and you're like, boy, I sent Scott an email, and he never wrote me back, and I said, so text him. And Paul was like, he hates texting, and he was like, I don't think I have his number, and I don't want to bug him.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll bug him, so I said... So I sent him a text message, and I was like, hey, asshole, where you at? Paul's been trying to get a hold of you.
And, yeah, Scott was ready to go on stage. He was doing
in the recording booth recording something.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, I'm in the recording. I said, call him. And he said, well, I'm in the recording booth right now. And I'm like, well, then you could text me. Well, here's this, here's that. And so we started coordinating. He said, you know what? This is bullshit. Text him. I ain't his effing entertainment coordinator.
So they started texting
each other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he was at an improv theater that night, putting on a show with a improv troupe he works with. So he was at an improv theater that night, working with a troupe that he works with in New York, and some interesting folks in that, including Rachel Dretch from Saturday Night Live, and a couple of other folks from 30 Rock and stuff. And he said, "Come over and see the show," and I did, and it's great watching terrific improv comedians. Their thing.
You said it was like watching. I mean, it was like watching masters dance on
stage. Yeah, they turn on a dime. They get everything. They build on it. Well, you would know because you've actually mm-hmm. done improv. I just sit there going like,
how do they do that?
You know, somebody walks into a scene and it's like, well, Mr. Abernathy, you saw ice cream here, and I go, no, I don't.
Well, then I would never improvise with you.
No, because I freeze and I don't know how to build on the scene.
You just say yes, and you just know that you are saying.
You just say yes. It's all saying yes. But
yes,
me,
I am Mr. Abernathy. Yes, I sell ice cream here.
Yes, and
then you say something back to them and give them something to go with.
I know.
And then it becomes this fun collaborative teamwork process instead of everybody being scared and standing alone on stage. Now we're just having a great time and being fools.
Well, you do it better than I do. So
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
But you're actually quite good at improvising. You do a lot of improvising in our everyday life, and you know,
trying to get out of trouble.
You know, the bottom line is to be a really good. That's my marble. Yeah. The bottom line is to be a really good improviser. You have to be a really good actor first, and you are.
Well,
and all those people. Rachel is an excellent actor, and she's an excellent character creator.
Yeah.
Scott is a terrific actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know who else was in the troupe. I know you mentioned a couple people, but they are, you know, they're great actors.
Yeah,
and
they
when
are.
You're really committed, if somebody says you're a mime, and you start being a mime to the best of your ability, really big and really strong, mm-hmm. you know, that's very funny to an audience. And that's something, I mean, it's simple and ridiculous, and it's not a great gift, because now you've shut them up in the scene. But you know what I mean? I mean, like, here, now you're being a mime for this next 5 minutes, and you're, oh, your mother's a mime. And then in comes mom 5 minutes later, it's like, oh, damn, they did that, didn't they? You know, it's just silly.
I don't give good gifts, though. I keep wanting to take it in another direction, because I'm a writer first.
Uh-huh.
And I want to script out everything, and everybody... And so I'm thinking, I'm not organic in the scene, because I'm thinking, how can I turn this into something I'm either comfortable with, or I have an idea for a gag, and so I will try and maneuver things in another direction so I can get that gag out, or I can take it to a place that I think is interesting.
Well, I mean, the idea is you really want to keep it personal.
Yeah, yeah, you want to kind of put the writer part of yourself on hold, or just forget that exists, and then just go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And built on that. Mm-hmm. But so I have a great time watching it.
So that was Thursday night. You got to see Scott Adson. We got to mention him in the podcast.
Yeah, and I got to hang out with him a little bit afterwards and watch him while he was a rock star. And, and everybody came up to him, and rightly so. And after that, went back to the hotel.
You ate first. You went to Carnegie Deli.
I did that in the morning. Actually,
you stayed up all night.
I stayed up all night, and then I got hungry, and it's like, I left the theater late, and I'm going like, I should go get something to eat, you know, I'm hungry. And I didn't, and I went to bed hungry, because I think I'd been traveling all day, and I just never ate anything.
You never stopped. Yeah. Well, you came back to the hotel and slept first thing. You checked in and slept.
Yeah.
So you'd had a little bit of sleep.
Yeah, so then about 6, I get up, and I go, when does the Carnegie Deli open? 6:30. Okay, so I went over to the Carnegie Deli. And no one was there. I was eating there like Woody Allen in that lonely scene in Broadway, Danny Rose, where he's just there by himself. And it was great, just watching everybody set up and everything. And and then I went back to the hotel. By that point, you and Calla were on your way in. And after you guys got acclimated, we went on the boat ride around New York City.
We did the tourist boat ride, and we saw the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island and her mouth agape.
Oh, yeah.
So it was pretty cool. And they also showed her they're rebuilding the Trade Center.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that was at Ground Zero, though.
No,
it's at a different location.
It was, you could see where Ground Zero was if you got off the boat and then, you know, walked a couple
blocks.
Right,
but they're building like five or six, like a cluster of buildings, and they were putting the glass on it, and they were lifting it up on the construction machines, and she got to see the glass rising and going on. You know, and the building was half glass and half not.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that was the first thing we did, and then we...
That was fun. I mean, I was born in New York. I lived there as a little kid. I've been back, I don't know how many dozens of times, and I never taken... The boat ride around, and I've never gone over to see the Statue of Liberty. So
well, and they took you through three of the five boroughs. You know, you got to see Chelsea, and you know, I mean, like it was really neat.
Uh-huh.
And so we did that, and then Uncle Paul took us to an authentic Italian pizza place.
We went to Lombardi's down in Little Italy and had some pizza, and then we went over to Evolution, my favorite taxidermy store. And
it's not just taxidermy. It's like. It's like necromance.
It's natural history. It's like where you can get skulls and stuffed animals and
masks
and carvings.
Oddities.
Human bones, animal bones, mm-hmm. things like that. I got a tiger head.
You know, their human finger bones were really cheap there. They were much cheaper than the bone room where I usually... Do you love that I'm price shopping for human fingers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, the human finger bones are really cheap here. And Paul was like, don't. You know, because I've got like eight of them. I don't need more. But it's just like, well, you never know when you won't be able to get one. You know,
and I want a full dozen.
Well, I wouldn't mind, you know, at least 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, so, you know, eight and then eight two thumbs.
You don't ever really find... Person?
Am I what?
Are you building up a small person?
I'm going to build a real big size person.
From a... Oh, make your own Frankenstein.
I could.
Parts. Yeah, that'd be
Bonenstein.
Great. Yeah.
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 That doesn't sound good. No. So anyway...
I got a tiger head.
Yeah, you did. You bought a papier-mâché tiger head.
Papier-mâché, so nobody freak out over that. Yeah, it was made in the Philippines, and it was really nice. It was mounted on a... You know, it was made to look like a... It doesn't look anything like a real tiger head, but it looks really cool.
And I'll take a picture of it.
It's hanging in my office.
Okay. So I need to give you the video of the guy making my coffee and the tiger head.
Okay.
It's two things. I'll try to remember.
I'll email you.
Yeah. You know, they had a jaguar skin rug in there, like a vintage jaguar skin.
You have one of those.
Yeah, but I was astounded at the price on this one.
$50,000.
$50,000 for a vintage jaguar skin rug. It was in really good shape. But
yeah, but yours is in perfect shape, too.
Mine's in kind of awful shape because it was hanging in a barn in Texas for 50 years.
Really?
Yeah, it was from the late 1800s, early 1900s. It was from actually... When there were jaguars in the Southwest.
Antique jaguar.
It was an antique jaguar. And I had it redone about 12 years ago to look like it's in better shape. So, but mine is a real antique. This thing actually didn't look so bad, but $50,000 for that, man.
I wonder how much you could get for yours.
Probably about $50.
Oh, that's not great.
No.
But you've got so much of that stuff.
Yeah, I could stock a museum. But anyway,
I have a problem with dead animals. Dead human skulls, no problem.
Hmm.
Like Ruth, you know my girlfriend Ruth? You go in her kitchen, and I was so jealous. I went to her house, and I was like, I love your house, I love your house. And then I went in her kitchen, and I stopped cold. She's got a huge bell jar in her kitchen sink, and in it there's a skull, a human skull. And it has a huge section of the skull missing where the person was clearly bludgeoned.
Nice.
So it's either the skull caved in, you know, like in the burial process, or the person was bludgeoned to death. Either way, I would like such a thing on my kitchen sink. And Paul's like, no, thank you. And I'm like, get the animals out of here. And he's like, get the human body parts away. So it's like we have this understanding. Like he keeps his stuff in his side because dead animals gross me out. I keep my leg bones, arm bones, heads, stuff in my own.
See, I start collecting. You know, I have a problem with trophy hunting, you know. But because I've never really been a big fan of it. Yet
always hunted with a camera.
I have a lot of taxidermy because I would buy it from... taxidermists or collectors or stuff, because I like studying the animals and stuff.
Well,
we've said this before,
that you used to sneak into classes at Harvard and just to audit them and listen to the zoology and the classification, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go look at the stuff, but I won't go out and shoot something.
Yeah, so we woke up, we did the tour, then we went to the pizzeria, then we went to Evolution, and we got some rice pudding.
You got rice pudding. Now they're selling rice pudding. Rice pudding is now the new chic thing. It used to be ice cream, and then there was frozen yogurt, and then gelato. Now it's rice pudding, and you get them in these flying saucer-shaped dishes, and you eat it.
A place called Rice to Riches.
Yeah.
And they had about 17 different flavors. I'm making that number up. I don't know. Maybe there's 12, maybe there's 20. But it was probably not 17.
There's more flavors than just rice.
Mm-hmm.
I
had almond and Calla had chocolate chip.
Yeah.
And essentially, from the moment you walk in, there's a picture of Richard Simmons with tape over his mouth, and it says, "Shut up, Richard. I don't care how much fat is in this." And it's like, well, at least we've got that cleared up. And the place was buzzing. There were so many people. And I said to Paul, I need to go to there. And he said, you really don't need that. And I said, oh, but I want it. And he was like, oh, okay. So across the street we go. And it's like $7 for a bowl the size of my hand.
It's ridiculous.
Full of rice pudding. How expensive can that possibly be? Not
$7. You're paying for the bowl. It's like a piece of Tupperware.
But the bowl was really cool. And it had like a little scoop spoon.
Yeah.
And you could buy the bowls and spoons there. Or you got to keep the bowl. And it had a little lid that fit on there. It was really cute. And I told him, I said, boy, I'd like to keep this. And then we got back to the hotel and I was like, I don't want this. You know, so, I mean, you get to keep it anyway.
I didn't even taste it. Was it any good?
You did too taste it. You didn't like it. You thought it was fine.
I was working off a whole anchovy pizza, you know. So.
Oh, God.
It's wonderful.
Oh, but I can't stand rice. Give me the weird shit.
Anchovy pizza is very good.
Rice to riches.
Yes.
And then we went back to the hotel and Calla and I got dressed. Because I took her to see Spider-Man turn off the dark.
Yep.
Which was spectacle. And then we came back and we were exhausted because our flight from Detroit to New York was at 5 a.m. And we'd been running all day. So we went to sleep. And the next morning...
Oh, no. We went back to the Carnegie.
Oh, we went to the Carnegie. That's right. Because we were hungry and hadn't had dinner.
And
She got a sandwich as big as her head.
Yeah. Got a sandwich as big as her head.
Okay. So that was Spider-Man and
then
Carnegie.
Three people ate that sandwich. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was funny because she was joking, but they brought the sandwich and she goes, finally, someone understands my appetite because it was so big. And it was just, it was hysterical. But she was kidding. She couldn't even eat the bread off the top. It was so much food. And then...
I'm sorry, we didn't get down to Katz's.
Well, next time.
Yeah.
So the next morning we woke up and got ready and I took her to Wicked.
Oh.
She got to see Wicked on Broadway. And then after Wicked, we went to Ninja, which we've already talked about how awesome that was. And then Uncle Paul met up with us and we went to Ninja. And then we all went to see Anything Goes.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So she got to see, you know, as far as the Broadway shows go.
Three Broadway shows.
Well, and let me finish the agenda and then we'll go into that. Because after Anything Goes, Uncle Paul surprised her with tickets to the top of the Empire State Building. The very top.
Wow.
You know, where you can, like, and it was freezing and it was windy, so she really got the Empire State Building.
It was raining.
It was raining. Mm-hmm. And then we came back and went to sleep. We had dinner at Ninja. And then the next morning, Uncle Paul left, but I took her to the Natural History Museum. And then we went back to Detroit, and, like, 6 hours later, she had to go back to school.
Wow.
So, I mean, what a drag, you know? Like, it was just a crazy, crazy
weekend. It was a whirlwind trip to New York.
But she really did get to see it all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, there were, she went to, we went to the big Toys R Us.
Oh, yeah.
She saw Times Square. And I don't even remember when that happened. It was like somewhere in between. She saw Times Square. We went to the M&M store. She got to see Toys R Us. Like, she got to buy a t-shirt from a street vendor. She declined a hot dog. We had a late night pizza from one of those buggies. You know, like all that little stuff happened in between too. That was just the big events. But we were really pleased with our show choices because she got to see spectacle in Spider-Man, like true spectacle.
Yeah.
Then she got to see contemporary popular Broadway with Wicked and then traditional Broadway with tap dancing and all the skill stuff in Anything Goes.
What would you say her favorite was?
She liked all three for different reasons.
Oh, good.
However, I would say of the three, she loves, because she's a 12-year-old girl, Wicked. Yeah.
And that was her second time seeing it.
Yeah, she saw it here in L.A.
Oh, okay.
She was out here in this. And so she actually asked, she said, I would like to see Spider-Man, because her friend London, who has been on the podcast before, who lives up the street, had just seen it. She'd been to New York, which was how the idea was planted, because Cal came out for her spring break this year in February.
Mm-hmm.
And... when she was here, London was just home from a New York trip and was telling her about it and got her listening to Freak Like Me, which is this song that the Green Goblin sings in Spider-Man. It's the only good song in the show. And it's not even that good because it sounds like, do they know it's Christmas time?
That's all the freaks in the world are here right now in New York City.
New York City, do they know it's Christmas
time?
You had me cut it out last time, so let's stop there.
Okay. Well, leave it. I didn't like my singing. I wasn't singing, people, so that's not how I sing. And then now you got the disclaimers. So you're going to leave it in.
There you go.
I passed on seeing it because I'd already seen it.
You'd already seen it.
And I see enough of Spider-Man every day, so.
Yeah.
Hi, Spider-Man.
Which has debuted.
Yes, how was the debut for you?
Spider-Man. Congratulations, Aunt May.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Now we can finally.
Yeah, we got Spider-Man's mom here.
No, we don't.
Aunt May. Hot Aunt May.
Yeah, somebody said, hottest Aunt May ever. And I was like, that's not really that hard. You know, it's like... Yeah, but Sally Field is pulling her weight there. Jane Lynch has been Aunt May. June
Frey. I don't think Jane Lynch was.
She
Aunt
played Aunt May in an animated show. Yes,
really?
She did.
She didn't? Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
And June Foray has played Aunt May. I'm very honored. It's, you know, it's really interesting because when you go in and you do your work, mm-hmm. you really have no idea what the fan impact will be.
Oh, yeah.
And how much Spider-Man means to so many people because mm-hmm. you get so... And it's not that anyone in that room is ungrateful because everybody knows how silly it is that we get paid to do what we do.
There's a real, you know, there's a real gulf between, you know, like the iconic comic book females. There's like Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Black Canary, mm-hmm. Scarlet Witch, Invisible Girl, Zatanna, and then Aunt May.
Yeah.
There's like nobody in between.
I don't really want to see her in a Power Girl costume.
No. And then...
the hole would have to be down here.
But there is, but you know, there's not, you know, there's, she is probably.
But she's fun in this show. Yeah, I mean, she plays video games and she's not breaking hips and crying about it. She's out bungee jumping and four wheeling and going off for yoga weekends with her girlfriends and stuff. And it's really fun.
Training, taking yoga lessons from.
Later.
Oh, okay. Later. All
right. So I got a request for your character. They did that assistant editor month where Aunt May became the Herald of Galactus.
Yes.
You need to do the Golden Oldie. In Ultimate Spider-Man for Misty.
Wow. That'd
be great.
Wasn't her name Golden Oldie or something like that? Yes. Like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Aunt May as Galactus's Herald. That was pretty good.
Okay.
But it should happen off screen.
Yes.
It's like, where were you, Aunt May? Oh, I had the most wonderful adventure with this fellow named Galactus. I'll tell you all about it. That's fine, Aunt May. And you just never hear about it.
He was so hungry.
So hungry. I fixed him a stack of wheat cakes. And, what? Oh, Deuce is fast asleep, standing up on your arm.
Spider-Man is fun, and it's
debuted, and I think that, and I've gotten a lot of comments from people who really, mm-hmm. really dig it, and especially a lot of folks who've been watching it with their kids. They think it's a lot of fun, and it's mm-hmm. a good introduction to Spider-Man. And, stuff like that. I'm very happy to hear about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just...
You know what else we got to do this week that was really cool that debuted?
Oh.
Was go see Paul Dini on the big screen.
Oh, yeah.
In A Fan's Hope.
Oh, yeah. That's 14 right. Seconds. That came out. That's right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Morgan Spurlock's documentary on Comic-Con. That was a lot of fun.
And it is good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I just saw the trailer and I'm fascinated. I can't wait.
It's so good.
It's getting great write-ups and it just got an A in Entertainment Weekly.
It should. Yeah. It was excellent. We got to see that we went to the premiere and Alan Burnett came with us and Trish's wife and we had a great time. But Paul Dini's in it. He's on screen for about a minute and a half.
Oh, much less than
about
that.
The what?
Much less than that.
No, that's not right. It's at least that long, and you're talking about Comic-Con closing up being like the day after Christmas.
Yeah, everybody has a little segment in it, and you know they talk to various professionals and convention fans. Mostly, it's a story of people who go to the convention looking for something, such as there are two artists, aspiring artists, who both want to. Become professional artists and one meets with more success than the other, but the one who doesn't hit it off the bat right away is sort of determined to go back and give another shot.
You know, yeah, but, like, they want to spoil it for anybody because it follows, it's called A Fan's Hope.
Yeah.
Because it follows five people and their mm-hmm. experience through the convention while cutting away to pros and their perspectives or personal stories and why they go, why do they think it's important, what is it to them, what does it mean, what's the weirdest thing they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice because it starts out, it really is like the true Comic-Con experience. Like, it starts out by shocking you with the extreme to which some of these people go, and you're like, holy.
Because once you enter those doors, you're like, what's going on?
What is happening?
That's how, I've always wanted to make a movie about Comic-Con and show people the arrival, although in my movie it would be more fantastical, otherworldly.
Don't tell them because your idea is really cool.
But I like this one where it shows the trolley pulling up and people getting off.
It shows people on the trolley waiting to arrive, and it's like, oh, damn.
There are cosplayers and there are fans and there are zombies and there's just a little bit of everything. And it really is sort of, when I did my interview, I talked about it as if it was like Geek Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the tone they take with my little segment is that once you get to day four and the day starts wearing on, it's sort of like, it's still technically, you know, it's like late in the day on Christmas. It's still technically Christmas, but you're already kind of looking ahead to next year and kind of getting wistful about having to wrap it up and everything.
Yeah, but it was like he starts...
Get home with your stash of prizes or whatever.
Well, yeah. A lot of people do that earlier in the movie, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, but you know, like it starts by showing you, like it's shocking you with the extremes. And then as it progresses, it's like, you know, this actually really is a legitimate gathering. And then it progresses into, you know, this really means a hell of a lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Not just professionals, but these fans who come here year after year after year.
Oh, yeah.
And then it gives you a chance to fall in love with them and sort of learn their story. And it's more than just sympathy. You really identify with them and what they're going for and why they come here. Why do they make this pilgrimage? Why do they dress in these costumes? Why do they create these costumes? What's the deal? Like, you know, and then by the end of the movie, you really kind of want to go.
Yeah.
And you really appreciate what it is, which is why I thought it was such a great movie, because any one of those four perspectives that I just presented would have been a valid movie in itself. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Morgan Spurlock, I really felt like he covered the subject completely. You actually used the word, it was like a Valentine to Comic-Con.
Wow. Yeah.
Because he really took the time to understand it. And you really feel like you know a lot more about it walking away from that movie in a really deep way. Now, this is coming from two people. You've been there your whole life since the beginning.
Yes.
And I've been there at least seven times. Six times.
Yeah.
So we have a level of familiarity. I would be curious to find out what someone who's never been would think of the movie. You know, like, I still don't get it. Those people are crazy. Or... wow, I really want to go to that now. It seems like a real big pop culture phenomenon, or I'm totally indifferent. Like, I would be very curious for a newbie to see if that was their first exposure to this.
You know,
for us, I just thought it was spectacular.
Yeah, and you know, it really, and I'm watching this and I'm going, this is and is not the Comic-Con I know. Because I'd say it was about 70% my Comic-Con, but there was like a whole other chunk that the movie didn't capture or didn't know how to capture or just didn't get because that's a personal experience for me. Because, you know, I look back over the years, I would go to Comic-Con and we would do things very traditionally for a few years and then drop them or else things would change. But I remember in the early days when I was working on Tiny Toons and Batman, a bunch of us would all go together from the studio and we'd hang out together and we would go to dinner or we'd sit around sketching in somebody's room and we'd just draw, you know, whatever. Somebody would call out the name of a Marvel character, we'd all draw it, or a DC character and you know, fun stuff like that. Or just sitting for hours in the bar just talking and about comic book theory, shooting the shit about movies, you know, everything. And
nerds.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, but then we're very, you know, we're of the blood. We have been going year after year and, you know, we're of that fan kind of pro crossover.
Oh, yeah.
So our experience is different than the girl who wants to come and put on and be a big part of the
Sailor
masquerade.
Moon. Yeah, totally.
But her story was captured, you know, very well. Or the guy who wants to get, you know, a special toy, or the guy who's looking to break in. I mean, I've never done portfolio reviews as an artist showing my portfolio. I've actually done them as a guy who was looking to, you know, hire for Warner Brothers. And I would look at stuff and I'd say, yeah, you know, talk to this guy here, talk to that guy. And, you know, I was looking at, you know, I've done it from the other point of view. But also, it got a very good cross-section of what Comic-Con is. It's not going to be everybody's personal experience. And I was sorry Mark Evanier was not in the thing because he is such a big part of Comic-Con.
He's like the Comic-Con ambassador. Yeah.
He's like the Lord Mayor of Comic-Con.
Totally. He's the Mayor McCheese of Comic-Con. Yeah.
But there is something like...
I didn't mean for it to sound derogatory.
Funny visual all of a sudden. Yeah. With him with a hamburger head or something.
I didn't mean for it to sound ridiculous. I mean, it was just... You know what? That was the first official I thought of. That's where I am.
Mayor McCheese.
I think I'm hungry.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so
I'm
sorry.
More important than Bloomberg or anybody.
I think I should stop talking.
But there was...
Not going to.
That's where they kind of missed it a little bit. That's where somebody who's been going would know to things like Quick Draw.
Yeah,
where's
Sergio Aragonés?
Sergio was in there. No, he was shown.
Briefly.
He was shown.
Yeah, because I did. I said hi to him.
Yeah.
From the seat. He was not there. I yelled at the screen.
Yeah, that was fun. Every
like
time somebody
idiot
came
in a horror
on
movie. Don't go in there! Yeah. Hi, Serge! I started yelling.
then there's like the late night drunken political rhetoric with guys like Flint Dilley and Frank Miller and stuff like that.
Yeah, they showed Frank. Flint wasn't in it. That
Flint
wasn't
in it, but again, you know, I would hang out with Flint Dilley and you know, we discuss, you know.
You guys are huge nerds.
Oh, yeah.
You're both nerds. Nerds. Well, I mean, love it,
though. But that's the thing.
But I love it. You know?
It's nerd vacation. My experience as a pro is going to be different from an aspiring fan or even a fan who just goes
to be a
sit
fan
in the big hall and listen to Kevin Smith or something.
Exactly. And there are a lot of those, you know, like people that just go for the experience or to be close to people they admire.
Uh-huh.
And I'm, you know, like my experience personally has been very different because the first time I went, it was with you. And
right.
So I have always been immersed in pros, you know, where it's never been like, oh my God, there's so-and-so. It's like, oh my God, it's Grant Morrison. It's like, oh, well, there's Grant. We better go say hi.
Yeah.
Totally different experience, you know, than somebody who's not wearing a pro badge and who doesn't know Grant personally.
Yeah.
We have some very interesting Comic-Con stories because of Grant Morrison.
Yeah,
sure. You get cancer.
And then, and then there was, have been times like I've hung out for most of the convention with David Mandel or with Kevin and Jennifer, stuff like that. And it's always different. Like one year, I guess when Jay and Silent Bob was coming out, we just hung out in Kevin's...
Well, you were in that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just hung out ate burgers all the time and just chatted about Comic-Con stuff and went off to see the movie. That was a lot of fun, just sort of hanging out.
They're good folks. They're really smart.
I just like hanging out with people during the convention. I don't really like doing the floor, and any book I want I can get on eBay. And that's sort of distressing because now retailers like Bud Plant are going away.
Bud Plant is going away. He's a huge part of Comic-Con.
I know. I go to his stand first, but he was not going to be at Comic-Con this year. I think he's out of business completely. But that's where I'd go get the art books, get the comic book compilations, and everything
that's
like that.
Crazy.
It's like it's forcing.
Can you imagine a Comic-Con without Bud?
No, yeah, totally.
And I don't know Bud.
I was actually looking forward to having money this year and seeing it.
It's the first thing you see when you hit that floor. It's like there's Bud. He's always got the prime location
straight down the center.
Yes,
he's got fiction. He's got art books. He's He's got sketchbooks. He's got vintage stuff.
He's got graphic novels.
He's
got
those
little.
He got that little tin figure of Lucy that I got you last year. He has all the collector figures and everything. Somebody is going to take his place, but still, it's just like
it's not the same.
And that was like one of the real places, and that and some of the dealers where I could just go and buy old comics and browse and everything.
Actual comic at Comic-Con.
Yeah,
as opposed to the new Lego video game or the new Star Wars movie, and it's it was actually one of the retailers is lamenting in the movie about. You know, this used to be about comics. You're lucky to find one now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not wrong.
Well, I mean, I got to say, just from going to WonderCon this year, it was such that drastic other side of like, oh, yeah, that's right. This is what Comic-Con used to feel like.
Yep.
And I was
was it more of that?
Oh, yeah. It was more all about comic. You could walk to the creators really easily, and it was pretty much focused on them.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that's good. I'm glad that's still.
Yeah. There's
we didn't
none
go
of the
sure.
entertainment, none of the gaming, none of the movie stuff. Even Marvel's booth was very low key. It was just a panel and a plastic Captain America shield that people were posing with. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there are some guys, some artists I want to get sketches from, and by the time I, at Comic-Con, I finally one, managed to find where they're located, and two, make the hike over there. They're booked up for commissions. And these are some guys who've worked on some of my books. I've asked, can I get a sketch? And it's like, sorry, man. I booked everybody before you. You know, maybe the next show I do in September.
Yeah, I was able to just walk up to Mignola and just say hi and tell him how much I like his work.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
That's something you can't do at Con. You can't get
you can't get near anybody.
Yeah,
you can. Yeah, I mean, you probably can't even get near Emily at Comic-Con because there's 30 people dressed like stormtroopers in between you.
And there was a time like you would call people at before Comic-Con and you'd say and you'd work out your schedule like, hey, you know, let's meet at Mr. Tiki or let's go to the rib place and you'd kind of book up like some nice casual lunches and dinners. Now you get down to Comic-Con and it's. Oh, you know what? I'll see you for dinner in LA after Comic-Con or my next trip through. But during Comic-Con itself, I'm talking to this publisher. I'm doing this interview. I'm running around. I'm doing a bunch of other stuff.
Well, and so many of the pros that we know and love are there strictly to do business and go home because the July Comic-Con in San Diego is such a production now.
Yeah.
It's difficult to find people. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, the restaurants are sold out completely unless you had reservations months in advance. Uh-huh. And even if you don't, because of what you guys do, five or six people will come to the table with comics that they want you to sign, which is not a problem because that's what you're there for. And those people are your boss. We've talked about this on here, you know, so everybody knows that you stop what you're doing and do it. But at the same time, it's difficult to actually make a connection with somebody. Well, and most of the pros that we see, love, and work with either live in LA or come here frequently enough where we can zip up to the castle or go to Musso Frank. Or, you know, like we see, I mean, Marv Wolfman lives around. We see Evan Ure on a regular basis.
We miss Chip Kidd because we were in New York when he was out here. But ironically, we will catch up with him at Comic-Con.
In June. Well, we're going to go to New York in June.
Oh, that's true.
And so we can see him when we go there. Max Maven is doing an off-Broadway show in New York in June. Oh, wow. So we're going to go see him. Mm-hmm.
It is even hard for me and Paul to hook up at Comic-Con and just get stuff together. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, we had to get you those Rashi buttons about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's 90 days till Comic-Con.
Are you counted?
No, somebody posted that.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody posted that, and I said, wow, look at that.
I got stuff to get ready.
90 days. But some people are, you know, it's too late for comic. You know, some people are saying, it's already too late for this year.
Yeah.
But I got nothing. I'm not on, I don't have a booth. We don't have a booth. I'm not talking about anything.
I love how he says, I got nothing. He's got 80 projects coming out, one of which they're probably going to tease by that time because they'll have animation in. You've been asked to do countless projects. You've got all this stuff going. I got nothing.
No, but I'm saying that happily. Like I got no. I'm saying that happily. Like, I've got no obligations. I don't have a booth to sit behind this year. I'm not promised to talk to anybody. I'm just going to go and enjoy. I'm going to go and enjoy.
You want to shake on that? Like we shook on the dogs?
No.
I didn't think
Well, the dogs haven't crapped all over everything yet. So.
I made him shake with me. He says, can I put canned food? Because we make our dogs food. It's chicken, rice, all bran, eggs, and eggshells. And salt and no salt. Mm-hmm. And he says, can I mix some canned food in with the dog's regular food today? And I said, if you shake my hand and tell me if they get diarrhea, you're going to clean them.
And
he was like, I don't. And I said, you sure you want to put that in there? And he was like, I said, they could get real sick. And he said, and he shook on it. They seem like they're feeling fine. You've been lucky so far, pal.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's disgusting. But, staying in. That's disgusting. So that's what it's like to live here.
There is the off chance I might be yanked on an animation panel.
I can't imagine that happening.
Well, okay.
I can't imagine you talking about any kind of animation superhero or anything like that at Comic-Con.
Funny Animals.
You're going to be... Yeah. Funny Animals, exactly. What?
Funny Animals, what? Not till next year, though.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, just like...
I can't imagine you will have pitched and sold a specific project that you're working on top secretly by then. I can't imagine you would have an
announcement. Well, it's just que sera, sera. Whatever. We'll see what'll happen. But anyway, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, but you say that every year. And then what happens is he says, we got nothing. Let's spend a day at the sand, because there's a sandcastle competition out there at that time. And he's like, let's go to the sandcastle competition, and I really want to show you the city. And then as Comic-Con approaches, he's like, well, I've got this 10-2 thing, and then I'm signing over here, and I'm like, Why am I going to Comic-Con? And he's like, well, you could go on Thursday and go home because I've got all this stuff Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it goes because it books up like about a month before Comic-Con is when you really find out when and where your panels are going to be. And so he starts with the plea bargaining, and he's like, well, and I can take the train myself. And then it's like, well, weren't we going to go to the sandcastle? Yeah, but that's happening during this other thing that I kind of want to do because that's what he loves. And it happens once a year. And so last year I said, you know what? You go. Go and really enjoy it. And he had the best time because I wasn't there tapping my foot or bitching. I probably was bitching on his cell phone anyways, mm-hmm. but that's what I'm very good at. Oh, look at the eye roll.
What?
You know, but I mean, it was really because he approaches it from a true fan who has been going year after year after year. And so he walks that floor with childlike wonder every year. And every couple steps, it's Mr. Deeney, Mr. Deeney, Mr. Deeney, Mr. Deeney. Yeah. It's fun. You know, it's really neat to be Paul Deeney at Comic-Con.
I mean, I wish they hadn't made the getting a badge so restrictive. I used to get one with my cousin's name on it. And I used to switch out. That way I could go shop for stuff. And then, like, guys would come
up to me. Oh, because nobody knows who you are on site?
Well, they'd come to me, hey, aren't you? And then they'd read the name, and it's like, oh. And then they'd...
You can wear my badge.
I could wear your badge, but then, you know, they
I'll
might...
I'll put you in a corset.
I'll trade patches okay. with you, Paul.
What?
I'll trade patches with you.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll just try and use my cousin's name again and see if I'll get another one for him. He never shows up. And so I'm not going to say what his name is, just because.
Yeah, everybody will be like, hey, aren't you Paul? Oh, I know your cousin. I listen to your podcast. Yeah. You ain't fooling nobody. Yeah, I think the only actual bad time we ever had at a con was that year we went to New York and that guy shoved you.
Yeah.
Well,
he shoved you first. He
was pushing well, you. I was getting other kinds of harassment.
Oh, yeah. Well,
via my email.
I don't plan on going to the New York Con.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. But the Comic Cons are always good.
Yeah.
And you are very loved there, and you were very loved in this movie. So we saw the movie premiere.
Tomorrow
we're going to see the Avengers premiere.
That'll be fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, man, you ain't got no idea how excited I am.
For that.
I'm so excited.
I've been waiting for that. Yes.
Yes, we have. And what else did we do? We went to the Academy of Magical Arts Awards. That was fun and interesting.
That was fun.
Yeah. At the Saban Theater.
Yep.
Big, beautiful theater. And we got to see Matt King.
And your old mentor, Siegfried.
Yeah. Well, he was never really my mentor.
Well, he's
a
teacher.
Well, for one day. You know, but I've seen him several times, and he's always very nice to me. You know, like, I mean, he's really got a way.
Yeah.
There's something about him that I would really like to learn. When that man talks to you, because he gets so few limited moments with people, he really gets in there, you know, and he makes very deep eye contact with you, and no one can distract him. And then once he's broken, he's gone. But he is so in you when he talks to you. Like, it's a gift that I have. You said Steven Spielberg does that too.
Well, yeah, that's a trademark of very successful people. Like, when I was working with Steven, he would come into a room, you would have his entire attention and focus and imagination for as long as he had to be there to focus on whatever the situation was. And then when time's up, off he goes to put that attention someplace else.
Yeah.
A lot of really good producers and executives, especially in the film business that I've run into, have that sort of focus.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, let's get in there right now.
Yeah.
But this is on a personal level too. And I mean, you get the impression that this dude is going to remember you. And he does. And you go, holy crap, how many faces must have crossed your eyeballs? How do you know mine? But he does. And you think, dang, I got to be more effective with my day. Because this guy, I mean, that's friggin' Siegfried. He changed the entire Las Vegas Strip and the cruise ship industry. I would say single-handedly, but Roy certainly helped. You know, so, I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's friggin' Siegfried. You know, and he knows.
Yeah.
And he will remember you. It's crazy. And I just thought, I want to be that person. Like, I want to be that focused and that sharp. And that's something you learn. You're not born with. You learn that. Like, we are here because you've got 10 minutes with me. Let's make them matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is totally somewhere else and you cannot get him. So you better have got what you need in those 10 minutes. It's just super effective.
Yeah, I wish really I had that same sort of focus.
You can. I have seen you do it.
Well, I could be better remembering names and things like that.
Well, you're pretty good.
It's awkward for me when somebody comes up to me and says, you might remember me from this time we worked briefly together.
We've been married for 7 years. And you like, go, no, I have no, I'm sorry, I don't know.
My name is Stan Berkowitz.
Oh, God.
No, it's not
for me. Oh, shit.
We wrote Batman together.
You guys
Superman,
know Stan. They've
Batman
known each other
Beyond.
Forever. He's teasing.
Stan Berkowitz.
Remember, we've had all these dinners. We just had dinner at Randy's house a couple weeks ago. No.
Randy?
You're like the maid on Family Guy. No.
No, no.
No.
No, no.
No.
No. Yeah, we should get Stan in here one night.
We should do Stan on podcast.
He's got some great stories. But anyway, so...
We need to get Randy Rogel in here to tell us.
Oh, Randy's got theater stories. Randy is an amazing guy. Not only did he write some of the best songs for Warner Brothers in the last 20 years, he's also got amazing theatrical stories from...
We should make Randy tell him.
Yeah.
Because they're hysterical. We had dinner. He hosted a dinner at his house with Stan Berkowitz, which is why I bring him up.
Yeah.
It was about a month ago.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a really fun dinner. It was Bob and Stacey Goodman and Alan. And it's just a great, great bunch of people. And they're just good guys and gals anyways. But Randy was telling us some stories and we were on the floor because he has done so much theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he has seen so much inappropriate shit happen live.
No.
And I'm not talking dirty stuff. I'm just talking like, why is this happening right now?
Yeah, yeah.
We totally need to get Randy on the show.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And what else has been going on? Oh, we had Easter this last weekend.
Oh, bagel baker.
went away for Easter. That was a lot of fun.
Pringle Picker. Okay, you know, we have to explain this. We're playing, because I'm still laughing about it, we're playing Apples to Apples with Paul's family.
Oh, let's give the rundown on Easter. Let's, you know,
what is there to run down? We did a bunch of eating and hung out with your family.
We drove up to Carmel.
Yeah.
And we took the dogs with us.
Yes.
And we hung out at my family's house.
Yes. I covered all that.
And
except the dogs.
I guess so. And then we were playing board games after Easter dinner.
We could have just started at Apples Apples, which is where is it?
You left out the coconut cake. That was very good.
It was okay.
We all brought food to Easter dinner, and I got a local baker to make this great coconut cake.
Everybody liked it, I guess, except me.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're playing Apples to Apples with Paul's family. I don't know why that took so long to get out. And
I wanted to set the stage.
Are you still talking?
It was a real nice trip.
You're still talking. Can I finish the story, please?
Yes, please. Please.
Knock, knock.
Continue.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting Paul.
What?
Yeah. So anyway, he'll appear again in a minute, I'm sure. So we're playing Apples to Apples with Paul's family, and both of Paul's brothers are very athletic. They're like coaches, and they sort of like, they have a lot of that, what I would call dude vernacular. You know, like the way they talk to each other, they kind of jibe each other, and they're very, very, very close. All three brothers are super close.
Yeah.
But those two specifically they sort of speak the same language, whereas, you know, Paul, he is athletic and he has athletic proclivities, but these guys will go outside and play lacrosse because it's sort of how they wind down.
They're both
Paul
coaches.
Will crack a book, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, they're just a little different.
Yeah.
So it's very funny to hang out with people that look and sound like Paul, but are dudes, you know? Like, they're a different kind of dude. And so we're sitting there playing Apples to Apples with his family, and his brother Steve is really, really good at it. And his brother Bruce, not so much. And he doesn't, I mean, he's great at other things, but this just was not his game. And he actually did really well in the second game. The first game he wasn't doing well, and Steve was loving it. Loving it. To the point where halfway through the game, Steve had a ton of points and Bruce had none. And Steve goes, "Hey, how's it going down there, Bagel Baker?" And we're like, "Bagel Baker?" And he goes, "Yeah, Bruce Dini, cooking up zeros." And it's like, oh no, you did it. I never heard it either. And
I know,
thought,
we all laughed. That was really funny.
Oh my God, we laughed so hard.
So Bagel Baker got to be the phrase of the afternoon.
Yeah, so nice. It was hysterical. And I just thought, who says that to somebody? Like, it must be a sports thing. Like, because it sounds like, because, you know, the people that we run with in LA, we don't do a lot of scoring-based ribbing, you know, it's like ratings or something like that, but not like number scores. And so it was just so foreign, completely foreign and very funny. So of course I started posting, like I do on Unicorn Wednesday to my grandmother, pictures of bagels on Bruce's Facebook wall. And we drove by a place on the way home called the Bagel Bakery. So of course I jumped out of the car and took a picture. I was like, "Hey, I just drove by your office." It's just like, oh my God. You know?
Well, now we've got something
new. And his daughter's like Caitlin.
Yeah, now we've got something new to heckle Matthew Stafford with next year at the Lions game if he doesn't score.
Yeah, Bagel Bacon.
Bagel Baker.
Yeah, hey. We're starting a new thing.
The Lions are cooking up zeros again.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if he actually, I said, "Did you make that up?" And he goes, "I don't know, I think I did." Yeah. It's really funny.
Yep.
So I'm trying not to overuse it because it's so special to me. You know, it's like, yeah. So I got a unicorn in the mail.
From who?
Well, two unicorns this week. I got the advice giving unicorn. Only use your horn.
Oh, that's
only
right.
Only when you have to.
Oh, wow.
And then I got a little tiny pewter unicorn there from Mr. John Chadwick.
Oh, my goodness. John Chadwick. Yeah. Yes.
John Chadwick.
Wow.
And who said something, "Thank you very much for reposting our Disney Easter eggs podcast, John."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a big shout out, because what that unicorn is.
Yes.
Is magical. And in addition to being magical,
uh-huh.
It is magnetic, and its job is to sit on top of a hinge. They're called what's the thing say? It says on there what it is. It's right under the unicorn. It's in front of the duck. I know. It's the unicorn in front of the duck, which is in front of the pig, which is actually true.
Hinge heads? Yeah, hinge heads is what they're called.
That's a stupid name, but it does something cool. It's magnetic and it sits on a hinge.
A hinge like a door hinge?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we all need decorations on our door hinges.
I don't.
So it's my really... It's awesome. It's secret magic unicorn.
Okay.
And it's going to live in my office. I just hope it doesn't have a hidden camera in it.
Yeah.
So sneaky. Chadwick, if I find a hidden camera, you're in big, big trouble. So I better not be in there.
Everybody likes unicorns.
I don't like unicorns.
Tomorrow's
it's a
Wednesday.
Bad time to tell everybody.
Yeah. Tomorrow's Unicorn Wednesday.
People are sending you unicorns every week.
They do. I get unicorns a lot now, and it's like I get pictures of them every Wednesday, and I'm like, oh.
I hate unicorns.
No, I don't hate them. I'm unicorn indifferent.
Do you laugh when they die in that song?
What song?
The unicorn song, the Irish Rovers unicorn song.
No, that's not funny. I don't want them to die.
Well, they're all washed away in the song. It made me sad because at the end, you know.
Is that the pink alligators?
There's a long neck geese, some humpty buck camels, and some chimpanzees.
Did they use that?
Some cats and rats and elephants, as sure as you're born. But you're never going to see no unicorn.
You don't even know the words.
Yeah. A long time ago.
No, stop. It's sad.
There's more kinds of animals than you've ever seen.
Interrupting Paul.
Sorry.
Knock,
okay.
Knock.
But at the end, I'm listening to this. I remember as a kid listening to the song, and it's like, you know, the unicorns are playing silly games, and Noah calls all the other animals in, and they close the doors, and the unicorns are all washed away. And I'm going, and? Oh, they're all dead. Oh, that's a bummer.
Well, why didn't they get on the ship?
They're idiots.
Well, then are we sad that they're gone? No.
There wasn't clearance for their horns.
Yeah.
What about unicorns?
Yeah, they were stopped by TSA. They weren't allowed to take the horns on. They couldn't get them off.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right. Great story, Paul.
Well, I'm just saying that the song bummed me out, and they used to play it all the time.
All right, so I think that brings us up to date. You know what? I like your unicorns that you post. And I like most, I like unicorns fine. I certainly don't hate them.
Okay.
They're just not my thing. You know what I really like? Are little angry fat birds, which I think we've covered. And then Angry Birds came out,
angry
and I was
birds
like,
is perfect.
No, because I don't like those birds.
They're
I don't
fat
like their.
Birds.
I like the game a lot. I've gotten in a lot of trouble by not paying attention to Paul when he talks to me because I'm playing it. He's like, "Are you listening to me?" I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "Go get it." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm like, "Well, I just popped a nice bird." And he's like, "I can't talk to you anymore." So.
You know who likes unicorns?
Who?
Hobart.
Yeah? Did it eat?
Well, come here, Hobart. Well, Hobart would like to take on the last unicorn in a fight to the death. That would be really good. The last Tasmanian tiger versus the last unicorn. Wouldn't that
be a
great fight?
I would like to see a narwhal in a unicorn fight.
Well,
I think it would be like watching Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, especially if their horns lit up in different colors.
I'm going to bust Emily for a little bit. She didn't think narwhals were real.
A lot of people don't.
I've never seen them.
Do you want to know who else didn't think narwhals were real, but painted a picture of them anyway and made them look not at all like they do in life? Weiland. You know who owns that painting?
Me.
Paul Dini.
Wow.
If you would like to buy it, please let us know, because we tried to unload it forever and no one would buy it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because Paul hates the friggin' painting. He hates it.
Oh, you know who died this week?
They're called ghost narwhals.
Yeah.
Oh, Painter of Light.
Painter of Light.
His light went out.
Thomas Kincaid, Painter of Light, TM.
Pisser on Winnie the Pooh.
And the guy pissed on Winnie the Pooh.
Did we tell that story?
Mm-mm.
Thomas Kincaid peed on a statue of Winnie the Pooh and decided he was bigger than Disney at one point.
Yeah, he did.
Painter of Light.
That.
He went to my school and dropped out because he thought he was too good for it.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now he's dead. So, and we didn't like his work anyways. Wasn't even nice.
And now QVC has all his paintings half off. No.
Yeah, they should. I'll tell you what they can have at half off is this Weiland painting. Ghost Narwhals, it's called. Do you want me to not talk about your painting?
No, but, you know, you can. But I think the weird thing about Thomas Kincaid is I went to a couple of his galleries, and you couldn't buy an original. They never sold them.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't afford them. But they had prints. And I actually think he probably had a factory of people creating this digitally, you know.
I'm sure.
Yeah, from what I understand, most of his money was made off of the little, like, Hallmark figurines that looked like his paintings, too.
Right, or tins with cookies in them, or you know, puzzles, a lot of puzzles and stuff. I mean, it was the licensing. That's where a lot of the money is.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're up to date, right? Like, everybody, it's April 10th?
Yes.
I mean, it's not. Yeah, well,
it's April 15th.
It's April 15th, question mark. I've done a seance on Friday. When is your birthday?
Friday. It was Friday.
It was Friday. Well,
happy birthday.
Happy belated birthday.
Belated birthday.
Thank you.
What did you get?
I can't believe you didn't wish me a happy birthday on my birthday, by the way.
We don't like you. Not true.
I got
love
everything
you.
I wanted. And
M-O-U-S-E.
A new job.
Oh, you got everything you wanted?
Yep. Yeah, and a new job.
Hey! Yeah. Is that what you asked for your birthday?
Yes, it was.
I always ask for human body parts. What else did you ask for? A job and what else?
Everything else. I got it all.
Oh.
Well, wish Ezra a happy birthday, Hobart.
Oh, shit.
Huh? Hobart, wish Ezra a happy birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he is. He likes him. Everybody loves Ezra.
Yeah,
yes. See? Okay, so I think we're caught up. Taxes? No one cares about that.
Yeah.
What else? I think that's it,
yeah,
right?
I think
we
that's
covered
it.
Easter. We took a trip. We went to New York. We did the AMA Awards. We did a ton of stuff in March. Spider-Man's on. Comic-Con's coming. Paul's new movie, A Fan's New Hope, in which he appears for a minute, is out. We're going to the premiere, and we'll tell you guys about that when we come home. We went to the premiere last Wednesday,
went
but we'll tell
premiere.
You about that next time we're on the microphone.
Yeah.
Because we don't
and
know
we may even
was.
Have a special guest next week.
Yeah?
I don't know who, but maybe I'll ask somebody.
You just made that up.
I could ask somebody.
Yeah, so we might or probably might not have a special guest next week, as if we're not special enough. Mm-hmm. Y'all are listening. You're special. You're a guest.
So that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, good stuff coming.
Anything to add, Rashi?
I'd just like to know where the life jackets are.
Well, unfortunately, all the life jackets were on the SS Peeners 14.
Oh, man, I'm in big trouble.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.